It's Australia Day 2015, and I could not think of a better day to announce that this is episode 100 of the Photo Biz Exposed podcast. Today's interview features Jonas Petersen, who is returning after 75 episodes and a lot of water under the bridge. That interview coming up in just a minute.
Are you planning to have a successful wedding and portrait photography business? Join Andrew as he interviews successful photographers and business experts to fast-track your success. Welcome to the Photo Biz Exposed podcast with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Hey, it's Andrew Helmich here from Impact Images and welcome to episode 100 of the Photo Biz Exposed podcast. I never thought I would hear that or say that when I started this almost 2 years ago. I've got a few thanks that I'd like to start with to kick today's show off. It will be an interview as usual, and I have a couple of voicemails and announcements following the interview. But first up, I need to say thanks to a particular group of people that have made the podcast possible, that are the reason the podcast is still going today, and that is you if you are a premium member. Without your support, without your backing, without your trust, and of course without your investment in me and yourself, I would not have been able to get to episode 100. It's a huge milestone. Like I said, it's something that I couldn't imagine getting to when I first started. And I remember in the early days of the podcast, I felt almost embarrassed and apologetic for having a premium membership area and asking listeners to pay for some extra content. It was something that wasn't or hadn't been done or certainly wasn't very common with any podcast, let alone photography podcasts. So it was a big chance, but it was the only way that I was going to be able to give up the time required to put out a show each week. And now looking back, there's an amazing resource there. There has been so much content shared, so much good information shared by guests that it blows me away. I can see and I realize, and it's so obvious that the podcast is a massive resource for anyone that's interested in having a successful photography business. But like I said, it really wouldn't have been possible without the premium member. So if you are a premium member, this episode is for you. And I promise to keep fighting and working hard to bring you the best content I possibly can, the best information from each guest. I promise not to interrupt too much, to listen as much as possible, and to make that premium content as worthwhile as possible and give you every chance at having your own successful photography business. I also want to say a big thanks to you. If you've ever left a comment in the show notes, if you've ever sent me an email to say thanks or even ask for help, it's just lovely to put a name, if not a face, to a listener stat. So if you are one of those people that have left a comment in the show notes or left an iTunes review or been in touch with me, again, it's your input that motivates me to put out this show every single week. And of course, if you are a free podcast listener or a new listener to the show, I also want to say thanks to you because without sampling the free content, you don't know how good the premium content can be or could be. So look, it's wonderful to have you as a listener, whether or not you're premium or not. I hope if you are serious about your business, about creating a successful photography business, then you will take a chance. It's not even a chance anymore. If you will make the investment in yourself and become a premium member, if you have the ability to listen and take action and implement some of the things that you hear, then I know that the podcast can be a massive help. And lastly, I want to say thanks to the interview guests because without them, the show certainly would not be possible, that's for sure. And I remember in the early days when I had this idea of starting this podcast, I hit up a few mates, guys like Ben Martin, Israel Smith, Ben Newnham. And, you know, those guys, they said, yeah, we'll give out some time and answer your questions and be open and honest and basically give me a chance. And that was so, so appreciated. And it was their generosity and their willingness to say yes and help me out that gave me the courage to contact other photographers that I didn't know so well, guys like Ian Wilkinson, Jerry Gahonis, Matt and Katie from Matt and Katie Photographers. And yeah, the rest is history, you know. And since then, I've had some massive names in the photography industry on the show. And I'm not saying or not suggesting that the content that they share is any better or any more valuable than the information shared from that very first podcast with Ben Martin, you know, who shared some really wise words about getting started in the business of photography. So I just want to say thanks to everyone and show my appreciation to the interview guests, who you have to admit, particularly if you are a premium member, how much these photographers and marketing experts and social media gurus, how much they share, how much they divulge, how willing they are to open up and disclose some pretty personal information and numbers when it comes to these interviews. It's very, very cool. And I always hoped that I would get the information that I do seem to get from the guests, but I wasn't sure how that would happen or how that would work when I first started. I mentioned before that I get the occasional email. Actually, I get a lot of emails, but a lot of those are questions and people looking for help, and which I'm more than happy to offer. But occasionally I get emails from listeners that are actually taking action and implementing what they hear. And it's emails like those that make me feel so good about the job that I'm doing with the podcast. You know, when I first kicked this thing off, it was the thought of having or building a community of photographers, a platform where people could come and learn and hear the things that you might hear when you go to a paid seminar and get access to that, you know, every single week from different photographers from around the world. You know, I had this idea of building this resource and building something valuable, but you always wonder whether or not it's actually working. And I don't really know. I mean, I know that I can implement what I hear. I've certainly learned a lot from the guests that I've had on the show. But unless I hear from you, the listener, that I don't know exactly what's working, what's not, what you're actually using from what you hear, if anything at all. And when I was getting ready to record episode 100, I received this email from Paul Duane Photography in Ireland. And he wrote to me, it's just a short email, but it's these sort of emails that make the difference. He says, "Hey, Andrew, just a quick note to say I'm engrossed in the podcast. It's been one of the best decisions I've made signing up. One of my New Year's resolutions is to get more involved in the comments section. I've taken on a lot of tips and hints, and it's helped our business so much. Anyway, this is just a quick note to say hi. Talk soon, Paul." That's awesome. I mean, it was nothing specific there that Paul told me that he's implemented, but I know that he's taking something from the episodes and he's actually using it. It's actually helping his business. And that makes me feel all warm and fuzzy to know that. And just recently, if you'll indulge me for just one more minute, I received this absolutely amazing email from Deb Smith in Australia. And I want to read this one to you because this is an email that inspires me to do this every single week, because I've got to tell you, it is a job putting this podcast out every single week. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of time. And it's amazing how fast every Monday comes around. I can tell you, it feels like homework is due at the beginning of every single week. But this email from Deb was just extraordinary. And just before I read this, I've got to give you a little bit of context. If you are a premium member, you would know that I email you quite regularly. I've sent you weekly emails about the episodes, but I also ask questions and see how you're going and if there's anything that you need or anything you'd like to see changed or particular topics or questions covered, particular guests that you'd like to have on the show. So this email was in reply to an email that I sent out to Deb. And she says, "G'day, Andrew. After reading your email, I just had to sit down and reply. I want to tell you how your podcast has made a difference in my year. This was the first year I went out on a limb and subleased a space with a hairdressing salon for my own little studio. It was a slow start, but it's proven to be a great success. I decided to invest in some targeted resources that would make my ship go faster, as Sue Bryce would say. One of these was your podcast. I listen to it most weeks on my way to a weekly mentor workshop with a professional photographer here in Adelaide. There were so many bits of gold I've picked up that were new or reinforced things I'd heard before but decided to try here and there. Here is what stands out for me. One big influence was Steve Saporito. He convinced me in the interview to invest in ProSelect and display what I want to sell, albums, image boxes, wall art. I was also impressed with Matt and Katie's advice about in-person sales and have had some very good sales successes in the past 3 months. I finally got onto Instagram and found I really enjoyed it. I want to focus more on that this year. I was amazed to hear how influential it is now. I tried the competition box strategy and it worked great. Partnering with vendors, outsourcing editing. I was impressed with Min Wai's experience in episode 90 and decided to try Lavaloo for outsourcing my wedding editing. Videos and YouTube. I made my first video with iMovie and my iPhone and plan to do many more. I shot my first 10 weddings for free, as recommended by an Aussie wedding photographer that was on the show. Next year, I have paid bookings with a 2,000 to 5,000 pricing range. Tave Software Management, which was recommended by a pet photographer. I can't remember if it was Caitlin McColl or Charlotte Reeves, both amazing women. I'd be finished now without Tave. Annie, your Vance wife, first impressions, styling your studio like a beautiful apartment. Google AdWords, I've been trialing this for 6 months and have already had one lead for a meeting on Friday. From today, I'm testing to see if publishing my price list works better. It's not an exaggeration when you say the podcast will take your business to the next level. You're spot on when you say that implementing the advice will really work. It does, but you really have to put the work in. Mostly, I wanted to express how grateful I am for someone as generous as you. You're so genuinely enthusiastic and your interviews are real and heartfelt. I love that because listening to you, Andrew, reminds me that being in business doesn't have to mean being a sleazy, pushy salesperson. And this is the only way I want to do it, feeling that I'm making a difference in people's lives. Thanks for the book gift. I downloaded it straight away and can't wait to get stuck in. Cheers, hugs, and all the very best for you and your family in the new year. Deb Smith. Wow, I know that was a long email, but it was just, it was a life changer for me. It's one of those emails that shows me that what I'm putting out there each week, what I'm sharing, is having an effect. And if that's only helping Deb Smith, then Deb, I am absolutely rapt. But I know there've been so many other listeners also benefiting from the episodes. So Deb, thank you. To anyone that's been in touch, anyone that's left a review for comments, and for premium members, for free listeners, and for interview guests, just a massive thanks, because this episode, episode 100, would never have been possible without you. So thank you.
And now, a macro look at the last episode.
In the last episode of the podcast, I interviewed Gabe McClintock from Canada, an amazing wedding photographer who had an amazing break with that wedding that he did. I think it was in Iceland that just went viral and he's never looked back since. Interestingly, there haven't been a lot of comments following that episode and I'm not sure why. I would love to hear your feedback because I think Gabe is an incredibly talented photographer. He shared a ton in that interview. I love the way his style and his photography has developed over the last 1 to 2 years. I don't know if you're possibly thinking that you need to have a big break to get discovered, to be a success. Is that how you felt following that interview with Gabe? Because, I mean, look, maybe you will never be discovered. Maybe you will never be a world-renowned photographer. But that doesn't make what you do any less important, any less special for your clients and for you and for your family. And I would hate to think that a takeaway or that you left that episode feeling that you've got to be discovered, have a wedding that goes viral, travel to these amazing exotic places to become a successful photographer. Because I don't think that's the case at all. And I don't think Gabe would be any less the photographer than he is today without that wedding that went viral for him a year ago. I think now maybe he has the freedom to shoot more the way he wants to shoot. We'll never know whether he would have developed the same way if he didn't have the success that he did. But I'd love to hear your feedback. I'd love to hear your comments or read your comments and your thoughts on that. And if they're a little bit controversial or you totally disagree, then that's great. Put down your thoughts, put them out there, and let's hear what you have to say.
You're listening to Photo Biz Exposed with your host, Andrew Helmich.
Okay, we're going to kick off this interview with Jonas Peterson. Usually at this stage of the show, if you're a free listener, you'll hear a big spiel about what you're going to be missing out on. If you're not a premium member, there's a whole heap of good content, and I normally list off the things that we cover. But today, it's Jonas Peterson, so there's a fair chance you're going to be missing out on some pretty damn good stuff if you're not a premium member. Hope you enjoy this one with Jonas.
Welcome to another Great Eye for Business. It's time for Andrew's special guest.
I feel lucky, excited, nervous, and happy to welcome Jonas Peterson back to the podcast for my 100th episode. Jonas is one of the most sought-after destination wedding photographers around the world, and his work is simply amazing. Unique storytelling is how his style is mostly described, and it's something that we'll be touching on after receiving an email from Jonas about his 2015 workshops following my registration. In 2013, Jonas was named Best Wedding Photographer in the World at the inaugural F Awards at WPPI in Las Vegas. He was also named one of the top 10 wedding photographers in the world by American Photo Magazine. Jonas, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be back.
Oh, that's great. Following you on Instagram and Facebook, it sounds like you've had an incredibly busy year. Would that be a good way to describe it?
Yeah, it's been a lot of traveling. I think the last couple of years have been like that for me, but for some reason, even though I've actually shot less weddings this year, it's felt like there's been extensive traveling, and I spent a lot of time overseas. Basically, I was in Bali for almost 2 months straight, and the US and Africa and Asia and stuff. So it's been a lot of traveling around the world.
And how many weddings did you shoot for this year?
I don't think I did more than 30-ish this year, which is probably a good number for me. That's somewhere where I want to be. Earlier years, I've done 40, 50, and 1 year I did 65, and then you have no time to do anything else than work and travel. So for me, cutting down was essential, I think. And I think what I did last year, I spent almost less time pushing myself marketing-wise and just almost let things die down. And what happened then was that I got more quality inquiries and when I didn't have to seek the work, if that makes sense. So instead, I ended up with a bunch of really amazing opportunities. And then I've had some of my best work done this year ever, I think. And yeah, so I'm grateful.
So before this year, were you doing a lot of marketing to get your bookings? Because, I mean, from an outsider's perspective, it looks as though you would be turning a lot of weddings away.
Yeah, no, I used to have it that way. It's interesting. I come from a background in marketing, so I haven't done any traditional marketing ever. I've literally never had an ad in a magazine or anything. But what I've done is that I've pushed my work to blogs and wedding publications and that sort of stuff. And I simply stopped doing that last year because I felt that I didn't need new people to see my work, if that makes sense. So I actually didn't send a lot of stuff out to be published. And I think that's what I mean by not doing marketing. But the traditional marketing, I've never done any.
So why do you think that the clients that you had this year, and I'm not saying that they're necessarily a lot better than the ones you've had in the past, but why do you feel you had a different type of client this year?
I think that, and I think this goes for everyone who shoots weddings, I think for me to do what I do well, I need people who are really engaged in letting me do my job well. When I get hired by a couple who just wants a photographer or they just want someone who's a name or they Google best wedding photographer here and there and I come up as a name, then it's difficult to do my job. And I think that goes for every wedding photographer. So instead, I've had a lot of couples who have had a previous connection with me somehow. They follow my work, or a lot of the couples I book now say, I followed you since before I got engaged, and now finally we're engaged, so now you're the first person we call. But it's taken me 6 years, I think, to get to a point where I feel like the majority of the people are of that sort of caliber when it comes to more a collaboration between me and them than me just coming in as a vendor and taking photos and leaving. So instead, it's a longer sort of process, but it's also a way more collaborative thing.
I guess, how does that process actually change? Do you have more meetings with those clients that really want you?
No, I would wish that, but with my schedule, I actually meet people less, but I try and communicate with them a lot. And then I have someone working for me, Jassy Connors. She's an excellent photographer herself, based in Queensland. But she does a lot of the communication when I don't have time. So when I'm traveling, she steps in. So instead, we have a closer relationship with them and make sure that we don't sort of miss that. Because I'm simply too all over the place to be able to communicate with people all the time. And I feel rude when I don't reply to emails because I'm on the African savannah or whatever. So I need someone to help me with that. But nurturing your relationship, I think, is essential to sort of get to that point.
Okay, so often are you turning up to the actual wedding day having never met the client?
Almost all my destination wedding work is like that. A couple of years ago, I said that I should start doing Skype meetings with everyone, but even that doesn't happen. And I think it's a sign of the times. I think we don't meet people as much anymore. People don't talk on the phone. It's the whole face-to-face thing is just not happening anymore, which I think is really sad. So I'm trying to push for more communication, more take time and talk to each other and all that. But a lot of the time I arrive always 2 days before, and I insist that if I can, that I meet my couple the day before and all that sort of stuff. But generally, I have never met them in real life before I arrive at the wedding.
Wow. So that meeting the day before, if you do get that, is that just a cup of coffee and a quick chat, or is that a two-hour sort of...
No, generally, that's what it is. And this is something I talk about a lot in my workshops as well. I think you need to be really good at getting under people's skins very quickly or making them very relaxed around you. And I find that whole trick to telling a good story or getting to know people is to sort of have them relax around you. So I need them to sort of not be intimidated by me, not show up on the day and, oh, here's the photographer. And so it's important for me to sit down with them at some point. But you know this as well. I think a lot of photographers do. If you meet someone the day before their wedding, it's not the most relaxed time for them. They're like freaking out and mom has flown in from this and there. And so it's important to get them to give you just some time and talk. And I generally don't talk business much. It's literally just chatting and getting them to relax and getting them to understand that this is going to not be stressful or difficult for you. Just get married and I'll focus on the photography. The rest is fine. You don't have to worry about it.
It sounds amazing that, you know, you're meeting your clients less, but you feel that you've had your best work this year.
Yeah, it's a bit oxymoron, but I think it comes from shooting less for me has meant that I can be more focused on the clients that I have. And I think that goes for everyone who shoots a lot. It's difficult to engage with 65 wedding couples a year or people who do triple headers, shoot three weddings over a weekend. I find that is, I did that a lot my first couple of years. And I mean, to be honest, you're doing your clients a disservice. If you can't emotionally engage with three weddings, especially if you shoot 15 hour days like I do, 12 to 15 hours, you become a wedding machine and you keep repeating the same work you did the day before. You post people the same way and you tell them to smile, you crack the same jokes and all that. And by shooting less, I can just be myself more and not just go back to old tricks, I think.
Mm-hmm. I remember you just mentioned then that, you know, the client's possibly feeling intimidated by you. And I remember reading a post after you came back from the, I think it was the Kenya wedding. You were photographing a couple the next week and they said, oh, Jonas, that wedding was amazing. I'm so sorry that ours isn't going to be anything like that, you know, being in Queensland. How do you handle that? Because they've got big expectations, but also feel like they're not going to live up to yours either.
Yeah, no, it's become a, I wouldn't say it's become a problem, but that's more and more things that I have to deal with couples all the time. And it's also almost become a problem because people don't book me locally anymore because they don't think their wedding is good enough, basically. So it's become a really weird catch-22 thing. I shoot bigger and bigger weddings and then I lose the smaller weddings, even though I'm not more expensive than I was a couple of years ago. So it's something I need people to understand. But it's, yeah, that's a discussion I have to have with them. And I always tell them, I need a bit of balance and everyone needs balance. So for me, if I can shoot in Queensland on a farm with R.M. Williams boots and cowboy hats 1 week, and then I can go to Los Angeles and shoot there, that's great for me. And both weddings are equally fun for me, literally. Like, but to get them to understand that, I mean, the last 2 months, with every wedding I've shot, everyone says, we won't have any elephants here today. That's okay. So that's something I'm having to address at every wedding I go to now. But a friend of mine, Elena McGaw, said to me last year, because I was talking to my friends about this, I'm not booking locally anymore. And she said, you have to stop posting all the epic weddings then. And that's sort of a problem. It's like when you post these ridiculous, amazing weddings in these weird places of the world, that's going to intimidate people at home. They'd rather book someone that they don't feel intimidated by, and that's something that I didn't realize was going to be a problem, but it's become a problem, actually. So, yeah.
What I hear week after week from the guests that I interview, is they all say, you know, you will book the type of people that you show on your website. So even you're seeing that with these epic weddings.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, and I say that in my workshops as well. I mean, one of the mantras I've always had is you sell what you show, and the other way around, you show what you want to sell. It's gone so far as if I show a specific type of dress, a wedding dress, or a type of table decorations on my blog, I know that that is the type of wedding I'll be shooting the year after. And I have never really thought about this until it started happening. 2 years ago, I shot a beautiful wedding in McLaren Vale, and the girl had a pink wedding dress on by this British wedding dress designer called Jenny Packham, which I had no idea what it was. It was just a dress to me, and beautiful was it. But and then I put that on my blog, and the year after, I shot 20 weddings with people wearing the same dress designer. So and I found that interesting from a marketing background. It's like, I need to be very aware that what you put on the blog is what you'll be shooting next year. And both from a style point of view, but also from, I don't look at that as much. I mean, for me, it's more important that it's emotional and it has a great story and that's the type of work that I want to shoot. If I put a wedding on the blog, it has nothing to do with what people are wearing or where it is. For me, the emotional impact is everything to me. And that's what I put on the blog. But I then noticed that I will be shooting the same type of weddings, same type of dresses, blah, 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 for the year after.
Sure. Do you ever find yourself saying no to weddings because you don't think they're going to be a good fit?
Very rarely, actually. That's the thing I've never done. I've always done first come, first served. I've tried to come up with ways to do screening without coming across as a douchebag, but I haven't managed. I find that if someone contacts me and can afford my rates, which aren't that high, by the way, and I'm available, and it's in a part of the world where I think I can be or want to be at that time, then I'll say yes. And by doing that, I get a bigger mix of clients. I found that once I started raising my rates, when I started shooting more and more of the same type of people, and I found that be a bad thing for me. So I actually lowered my rates again to not alienate sort of normal people. So instead I get a mix of high-end weddings and a mix of normal people. And for me, that's way more rewarding, and I do a better job if I don't go in and just shoot doctors or just shoot investment bankers. Instead, I get different types of people, and for me, that makes me do a better job.
Mm-hmm. So on your website, it's exactly the same as when I interviewed you a year and a half ago now,
yeah.
And it says $5,000. Mm. So do you give the high-end clients an option to spend more if they want to?
There's always albums and that sort of stuff, but I've also found that in the last couple of years, there's so many good photographers around, and I think the wedding industry has changed so much in the last 5 years. So there's a lot of really high quality shooters who shoot for almost no money at all, which is sad in itself. But for me to then be charging $10,000-$15,000, it's not really happening anymore. But the higher end clients that I get, they book albums and prints and that sort of stuff. So the prices do sort of, their packages end up being still quite expensive. And then of course they have to pay for flights and accommodation and that sort of stuff on top of that. So it ends up being not pricey, but at least it doesn't end up at $5,000.
Sure. So at the $5,000, is it the same as when I last spoke to you where that's just the coverage and that's it?
Pretty much. The $5,000 is actually just a Melbourne package. Since I'm based in Melbourne, the next package up is another, I don't know, $500 or $1,000 up, I think. And that's for all other weddings, basically. And then there's albums and stuff on top of that. But the $5,000 one is actually meant for weddings in Melbourne and around Melbourne, because I struggle with booking locally and try to encourage people to book me. But I find it's interesting, though. I'm shooting, I get enough work, and it's not that. But it's interesting to see what's happening, and so many talented people around, especially in Australia. The quality of work here is insane. So, but yeah, five starting at that, and then there's obviously packages up from there. But the thing with high-end clients, I could be charging $15,000, and when I shoot those clients, they don't care if I charge whatever I charge. So for me, it's more a almost like a moral decision. This is what I think you should be paying for a wedding, and that's how much I would cost.
Nice. So you talked about traveling a lot this year. I mean, you've come off a massive year.
Yeah.
Is your family with you when you're traveling?
Yeah, I had a divorce with my wife a couple of years ago, so you might take that question out of this, but yeah, that didn't really work out. But yeah.
Okay, so what about your boys? So are they living in Melbourne?
No, they're in Queensland. So we had a divorce, but I travel up to there all the time to visit them. But I met another partner, and we're sort of juggling with the boys and seeing them as much as possible. And I have them all the school holidays and that sort of stuff. But it's also my ex-wife, she knows that sort of it will never be, I was never there most of the time anyway. So for the boys, it's no different. I spend quality time with them now more than I did when I was traveling 65 weddings a year. So I just go up there and see them, and now we're picking them up on Boxing Day, and then they will be with me for a month. So yeah, we'll try and do it that way instead for a while.
Yeah, sure. Well, let me ask you a hypothetical then. Let's say you're talking to one of your boys and he's just finished high school,
mm-hmm.
and he's got the opportunity to become a tradesman, say an electrician or a plumber or a builder.
Yep.
He could go to university. He's got the marks.
Mm-hmm.
But he says he wants to be a photographer to you. What advice would you give him?
Well, I would give the same advice as my parents probably did, reluctantly. So just follow your heart, and whatever you feel you need to do, I'll support 100% of the way. If you want to be a go-go dancer, I'll support you in that. If you want to be a photographer, I'll do that. But it's going to take a lot of hard work, but you can do it, because it's set your mind to it, and you can do anything.
Okay. What if he says, okay, Dad, I really want to be a photographer. What are three things I need to do to be successful?
Wow. Yeah. I think work hard, stay humble, and be nice to people.
Come on. There's got to be more to it than that. I'm doing that.
That's so hard to say. People try and say, oh, well, what did you do to get successful and all that? And I think a lot of success, or whatever you want to call it, is luck and timing. And you can't tell someone that. I think all you can do is try and follow your heart and do what you think is right. I think the advice I give to people in workshops is don't look at what your competition is doing, because everyone else is trying to be the next so-and-so. And then what will happen is it's just a bunch of clones doing the same kind of work. So the next big name is going to be the next person who doesn't look at other people's work. And that doesn't necessarily mean you'll make it, but whoever does that, once in a thousand times, one of those people will get lucky and get a break, and then all of a sudden they become the name or the person that people follow. But I never did anything with the intention of being successful. I just did what made sense to me. Even my first wedding was, I looked at wedding photography and looked at that and this doesn't make any sense to me. Where is the actual real wedding that I went to? And then I started shooting it that way. But it was never to do it as a marketing niche or anything. It made more sense to me to shoot weddings the way I do than what I saw around, basically.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you say, you know, like that one in a thousand will make it. So what about all the people going to workshops and listening to this podcast right now? You know, they want to make a living out of photography. They love it.
Yep.
Are we all trying to get to that spot where we get noticed?
I guess so. And I think it's another problem with, I've just had a massive discussion about this today, actually. Just the whole thing with social media stuff. Everything is accessible. You can look at everyone's work. You can even look at their EXIF data on their blog or whatever and see exactly what lens they use to shoot a specific thing. And you can figure out how they edit their images and stuff. Everything is available to digest and to break down into particles now. So it means that we're not forced to be creative. We can just look at what other people are doing and apply, that seems to be working for him, so I'll just apply the same stuff to my work. And I think that if we didn't have social media and all that sort of stuff, we wouldn't compare to the competition, and we wouldn't necessarily want to be noticed all the time. Because I think it's the sign of our times, is that everyone wants to be noticed. It's like everyone wants to be the next thing, and everyone's on a soapbox and all that. But I doubt that they did anything with that intention. I think you just want to do good work, and if you're good enough, that work will be noticed. But instead, we want to be noticed first and do good work second, and then it's just backwards.
I agree. I do agree with you, but I just feel like the be noticed part is taken over. I mean, that's what people are seeing as success.
Yes. And that's also what people think it's sad, because if you're not noticed, you won't get any bookings, and it's difficult to stand out because everyone is trying to be noticed. And then everyone is afraid to be different, because everyone else is doing this, so I better be shooting this way as well. But then again, I mean, this is like anything. Trends come and go, and I think that me and a bunch of other people maybe 5-6 years ago started steering away from the trends at the time. I mean, I said to people before, when I started out, the people I looked at and decided to be the, not the opposite against, but I decided to be different from was Jervant and Jerry Gionis and Marcus Bell and these guys. And then I started producing work that wasn't looking like their work, I guess. But it's going to go back to, and then all of a sudden, natural light shooters and Australian work was then famous for being quite dark and all that. And then it's shifted, but I'm pretty sure it's going to go back in the other direction again. So trends come and go. But what you said, being noticed is important. But I think we're at a time now again, after a few years of the trends being what they are, that it's some time for someone else to step up to the plate and produce something that's the opposite of what's been seen today. And whoever does that first is going to get noticed for being different again. And that might just be, I don't know, even know what that work is, but it's sort of, I think we're, it's time for another paradigm shift, I think, again. So we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. In some of your posts that I've seen and read, you've talked about change and feeling a change coming on.
Yeah.
What sort of change are you talking about?
It's hard to say. I just, over the years, throughout my career, in everything I've done, I tend to work in cycles a lot. I go in and I go all out, basically. I go all in, and I do that for a few years. And generally, that's for me been 7-year cycles for some reason. I was in advertising for maybe a few years too long, but I should have probably left after 7. I think I stayed at 9 instead. And I feel like with wedding photography, or with my photography in general, it's sort of time for change for me. I need to mix it up to stay relevant, not comparing to other people's work, but for myself. And I think that I can just feel an urge to be different again. And for my own sort of, the whole transformation thing is reinventing yourself needs to happen. And for me, that's been in 7-year cycles for some reason.
And how long have you been shooting weddings for?
This is my start of my 7th year. Oh, 2015 will be my 7th year, yeah.
Right, okay. So when I read those posts, I'm thinking, well, I'm not sure, are you talking about a change in your photography and your style? But it sounds like you're actually talking about a total change in your life.
Yeah, well, a bit of both. If I can't change my style of photography, then what's happened before in my life, then I've changed from shooting totally. I move on and attack something else. I still enjoy what I do a lot, though. So for me, I either need to revitalize my business and my approach, or it's not shooting style so much. I think it's just other things. But if I can't do that, then I tend to move on completely. But I don't think I'm there yet. I hope I'm not there yet. But then generally what I do, once I see what my next step is, I struggle with staying on the course I am, and then I want to move on to the next thing already. So for me, it's important not to look too far in the future. I'd rather just focus on what I'm doing next Saturday. But once I see whatever is on the other side of the fence, then I generally just go for that.
Well, let me take you a little bit into the future. Let's say you're at this crossroad and you've got a feeling that you're going to stay with wedding photography, but you've got a new look, a new feel. You can see a different brand. What do you do to get this out to the world? Do you go and hire someone? Do you do it everything yourself?
Well, it's interesting. I've tried to rebrand 3 or maybe even 4 times throughout these 6 years. And every time it's either fallen through because I can't get the designer to understand what I'm after. So it could be bad communication, which is frustrating because I've been on their side of the fence as well. But having been in advertising, I know how difficult it is to interpret what a client says. But also a few times I've worked with a designer for too long, and the idea that I had initially, I grew out of. So we started design process, and 1.5 years after that, we sit with something that was relevant 1.5 years ago. So for now, what I've done, I don't really update my look and my logos and all that sort of stuff. And instead, I change my logo every couple of years just because it's, you know, repaint the house, basically. But I do it myself, and I do it in 10 minutes. Just let's do a new logo in 10 minutes. Because I find that branding, which is, again, another thing I talk about in my workshop quite a bit, branding has nothing to do with your logo and that sort of stuff. A lot of people, like, for instance, the logo I had and the blog I had, my first 5 years. I did that logo in 10 minutes by Googling free vector tree on Google, and then I put that in Photoshop, and it was on page number 2, found a tree, and then I went in and I just wrote my name with a font that I had, and then that was my logo, and that won awards for being really comprehensive in web design, and I'm like, I'm laughing all the way to someone interviewed about that. Here's the story. I did it in 10 minutes by, oh, I want a tree, and I Googled free tree, and then I put the logo, my name on that. And similar thing, the logo I have now is just like, oh, it's time to do something new. And then I just looked at another font that I liked, and then I wrote my name with that. So I think good web design and good branding costs a lot of money, and you need to work with someone who completely understands your vision and all that sort of stuff. And they are out there. I've talked to some amazing designers, and I'm keen to work with them and all that. But so far, I find that I change all the time, and it's difficult for someone to understand the change I'm going through when I can't even explain it to myself.
Mm-hmm. So if you're giving advice to someone in your workshop, say it's an up-and-coming photographer, they feel like they have this new brand, do you suggest them they do what you do, Google free, whatever it is, or go and hire a designer for $6,000 or $7,000 or $8,000?
I would never recommend paying a designer that much your first, first 5 years, because you'd be looking at your work from a year ago and go, man, I've changed everything in the last year. And paying someone off the bat when you don't even know what changes you will go through, I find difficult. But at the same time, I think it's important to have something that looks good enough from the start. But there are amazing template websites and template things to find out there today. And I think as long as it looks professional enough, I don't think you need to spend that much money. And I know designers will hate me for saying that. I think, I've seen my friends work and how that's changed over 5-10 years. And I find it's better to grow into your branding than to create it off the bat.
So where should they invest their time and effort and energy?
It's interesting. Well, the problem is you need to get noticed, and that's you need to. It's a difficult question to answer. I think so many variables in.
Because everyone wants to be noticed, and we've even touched on that already. But let's say they're operating in a small community; they're not interested in shooting destination and epic weddings in Africa. Yeah. Are you saying that they just need to get noticed in their area?
I think that's where it starts. When my first year, so I was based in Brisbane then, I didn't focus at all on getting noticed to begin with. Sort of left advertising because I was pretty tired of advertising and all the high-end business. I was in charge of one of the biggest accounts in the country, and I left to just have a sea change. I left to produce real work for real people and just enjoy not being in advertising anymore. That was all I focused on. I focused on doing something I believed in from the heart, and then I put that on a website. Then what happened was that I got noticed, but I almost think that was almost not unlucky, but as soon as I got noticed, then that became the focus. But I did go in with the intention of just producing work that I fully believe in, not looking at it from any other way. And I think that's why I had my break. People noticed me because there was hopefully some soul to what I did. And that's what I would advise people to do, not look at what other people do, because everyone has a different idea of what a story should be like or what a wedding should be like. I think we talked about this last time I was on. I always ask people in my workshops, why do you hang the dress from the window? Well, why do you do it? And no one really knows the answer. But, well, because that's what everyone else does, isn't it? And I always ask my brides, I think you'll look better in the dress than if we're hanging from the window. And then I ask them, do you have a lot of other photos at home of your clothes hanging from windows? And then they start laughing. Do you have your jeans hanging from a window or your bra hanging from a window? I said, no, God, no. And I go, well, yeah, so let's not shoot that today then, because that is what I've seen before, but no one questions why we shoot these things. The groom's always asking when I arrive, do you want us to put our shirts on? And I would say, do you have a lot of photos at home of you putting your shirt on? And they go, no, I don't have any photos of that. Why would I want that? And I go, yeah, why would you want that? And then, well, I thought you wanted that. So do you think I want photos of you putting your shirt on? I've seen enough naked guys as it is. And then we have a laugh about that, and then I generally don't shoot that sort of stuff. But there's also a balance, because we are trying to tell the story of someone getting ready. But I think it's important to not just look at wedding photography as some sort of template. This is how you shoot weddings. If I would shoot a wedding for the first time without having ever seen wedding photography before, I will bet you they would never hang a dress from the window.
I got to cut in, Joe, just because, and I agree with what you're saying, but I know the listener is screaming at me to ask, what about that photo that you took of the dress in Africa hanging from the tent?
Well, that's the thing. I think, and I say that to even when I talk to people, I'm not stupid. I know as well that a lot of the time we're dealing with people who are getting married for the first time. For them, the idea of a wedding is a fantasy. And for me to refuse to shoot what they dreamt of having, that would be stupid. So if I go in on a wedding day and I notice that it's someone has lined up all this jewelry and even perfume bottles on a table, or I see the shoes being all perfectly lined up already, then of course I will shoot that. I'm not opposed to doing it. It's their wedding, not my photo shoot. So I do that. But I just want photographers to question why we do certain things. Is it for us? Is it for other photographers? Is it for blogs? Or is it for our couples? And so it's, for me, I always have a dialogue on the day with people. If I notice that it's not important for the bride to have her shoes, taken photos of her shoes, I won't do it. If I notice it's super important to them, I will do it. So it's more a being listened to what those people are about and all that. And generally, I don't get people questioning why is there no photo of the dress or the jewelry, because I'm pretty good at reading people on the day. But if I notice it's important, I'll shoot the crap out of all the details. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, because I think isn't part of the problem when the brides, or it's usually the brides, not so much the groom, that they've seen these wedding magazines and these wedding blogs, and there is the photo of the dress hanging in the window at every single blog she goes to. There is the perfume bottle and the shoes.
Yeah.
Don't they then expect you to shoot that?
Some do, but some don't. I generally don't shoot those sort of details unless if I walk in and I notice the dress is already hanging on a beautiful hanger with, you know, their name and wire and all that, or it's a padded hanger, they've spent time and effort on that, then I know it's important for them. If the dress is in a wardrobe and I go, where's your dress? Oh, I don't know, it's probably in the wardrobe somewhere. Then I know it's not important for them for me to shoot it. And instead I spend time on other things. I don't ever shoot ring shots, for instance. That's because I find that to be I question why we shoot ring shots. Like, that's the only thing you'll have after the wedding day. But then most of my friends shoot amazing ring shots. But the people who book me, they don't seem to want that sort of stuff. And we're back to, again, show what you want to sell. So I don't really show a lot of wedding dress shots. But if you do have two elephants in the background and you have a dress around, then I'll hang it up.
Okay, so it sounds like you would shoot whatever they want to shoot, but you won't necessarily show it on your blog.
Yes, that's another thing. Yeah, I mean, I have weddings where if it's important to them, I'll shoot the crap out of everything, and I'll shoot all the... I shoot invitations, I shoot menus, I shoot the food, I do all that sort of stuff, if I know it's important. I am, as much as we are artists or whatever, we're also service providers, so I think that's important to remember.
Mm-hmm, sure. I just want to touch on your upcoming workshop, because I've registered for the one in New Zealand, and I'm looking forward to that. But I got a follow-up email from you a couple of days after registering.
Yeah.
And part of the email says, after 3 years of teaching workshops, this one-day storytelling workshop is what everything has boiled down to. This is what I know. This is what I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
What is it about the storytelling that you're so passionate about? Why is that different to your other workshops?
Well, the workshops I did before was a two-day workshop. I would cover everything, literally my backstory, how I got into this and how I started pricing myself and how I, all that stuff, but down to editing and workflow and finding your voice and all those sort of things. I just found it to be too much to take in for people. And especially my journey is my journey. Me sharing everything about my journey to people, it's not going to help them, because no one can share my journeys. They can't apply that journey to their own journey. And I found that here I am talking about myself and all the glory of what I've done for the last 5 years, and I left them with my journey. And instead, I want to give people tools that they can use in their own way and in their own journey and apply that to them that are not mine. I'd rather just give them, here's what you can do, but I don't give them the template or the actual final answers. It's more, and I worked in advertising. I wrote hundreds of commercials, and So I've been a writer for many years, and for me, storytelling is what I've always loved. I mean, I grew up a kid who stayed in watching movies or read books. Earliest memories of my father was him reading Tintin books to me and stuff. I've been loved stories since forever, and I found that that is something that I look for when I shoot weddings. I go in and I'm fascinated by people's stories and the subtle things with connections with people and that sort of stuff. And if I can't tell a good story on a wedding day, I feel I've failed, and that's all I'm sort of looking for. But then I also realized I know the tricks I'm using to get there as well, and that's what I'm now sharing with people. And so there's some eye-opening things that once you know them, they're easy to apply to your own work without that then becoming my work. And that's what I'm doing now. I don't want people to have my recipe. I just want to give them storytelling clues and storytelling tricks, and then they can apply their own persona and their own everything. And it's not like a producing Jonas Peterson storytelling clones. It's more, we take a step back and give more basic ideas and more specific solutions to problems, and not just the Jonas Peterson way of things.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me one example of one of these tips or one of these ideas that I could implement or the listener could implement into their weddings next week?
Well, that's what the workshop is for, isn't it? Well, there's obviously a bunch of things, but I think to give a more general advice, and I talk about that in the workshop as well, is I haven't been to many weddings with photographers, but I've been to a few with other wedding photographers, and I find a thing that a lot of photographers think they have to do is take control and walk into the room and be gun swinging and tell people what to do and all that. I take the opposite approach. I think storytelling is more about listening. So story listening is more important than storytelling, because the actual storytelling I find starts when you come back with your material. And if I go in and listen to my couple stories instead of telling them what story we're going to tell today, then the stories will be more genuine. And for me, and people starting out, they look at other photographers and think, oh, I need to go in here and I need to tell people to laugh, or I need to tell people to look romantically into each other's eyes and all that. And then you're not telling their story, you're telling what you think is their story. So instead I listen, and sometimes I see people being super awkward with each other, and then that's who they are. And then I tell that story instead of trying to make them look confidently sexy at each other. Because then they come home with wedding images that are not them at all. So for me, real storytelling starts by story listening instead of storytelling.
Okay, so what if the girl, or even the guy too, what if in their head they're seeing these Hollywood-type shots in their mind? That's what they want to see from their wedding photos, but they just can't do that. They're that awkward.
Yeah.
They don't know how to pose. They don't know how to look at each other without giggling.
Yeah.
What do you do then? Do you still leave it as it is?
Well, that's the thing. If you go to my blog, you don't see that, because I can't do it. And if I would start posting people, and I mean, there are people who do this amazingly well. We have the Yerbant and these guys, and post people looking like movie stars. If I try and do that with my couples, we'd both be laughing ourselves silly. They can't do it, I can't do it. And the people who book me, we're not that kind of people. So I'm not selling the Hollywood dream, because I can't produce it, basically.
Okay. I love that. I love it. I want to ask you, Jonas, about the first time you came on this podcast, because you were the first big name, the first well-known photographer that I approached, because I approached you well before the interview went live.
Yeah.
I'm curious as to why you said yes.
I find that teaching and sharing your story or your approach is an interesting way to learn things about yourself. I found by doing my workshops and talking at conferences around the world that every time I open my mouth and say something, I come back and go, oh, I wonder why I think that's important. So it means that I sort of, by talking about my approach, I fine-tune my approach. And that is something that I learn a lot about myself and my next steps by just actually verbalizing them. Just talking about what I think is important makes me understand what I actually think is important, if that makes any sense.
So you came onto my show for therapy.
Yeah. That's what the thing is. And it's still that. I mean, I still have an agenda when I teach, but I fine-tune that all the time. And I think that you learn so much about yourself by sharing your views. Until someone asks you, but why do you do that? Then you don't have to think about it. But when someone asks me, why do you think that this is important? I will go, hang on, I probably need to think about that. But over the last 4 years, whatever, I've done workshops now, I learned something new about myself. And also, I do it literally all around the world. And all the cultures are different. If I have a workshop in London, it will be different than the ones I do in Scandinavia compared to here. And I share what I think is common sense to people in different parts of the world, and I realize it's not common sense to them. And then I need to sort of try and explain why I think that's important and all that. So I get questions all the time from photographers, and it's always different depending on where I am. It could be different in Brisbane compared to Adelaide, and that's the interesting thing about doing these things.
Wow. So you'll even see a difference between cities in the same country.
Oh, yeah, totally. And also, what applies to me won't apply to someone working in Wagga Wagga. It's not going to happen. So I think it's important to understand that the approach that I have, and it won't apply for a small-time photographer in a place like that. Nothing against Wagga Wagga, but I think I always say to people, it's important to specialize because you want to be a wedding photographer, and that's what people have booked you for. But if you work in a small town somewhere, you would probably shoot everything. You would shoot families and dogs and cats and go to the state fair or whatever and country fair and that sort of stuff. And that's what you probably need to do if you're in a small town. If you live in a larger city, you have other problems. So there's no one approach to any photography business. I think that's important to remember.
Mm-hmm. I've got one last question for you.
That's okay.
If you were to look back at your time now, mm-hmm. what is something that you wish that someone had told you when you were starting your photography business that you know now? What is something you wish that you had have known when you started?
I think good advice to anyone starting out, get a good accountant the first.
An accountant, that's so boring.
Yeah. Yes. Until you have a tax bill of, I won't tell you how much, then you realize that that's what you need to do. So start with structure, I think. But yeah, that's just one thing that I know a lot of people say, like, oh man, I wish I had got a good accountant on to start out and all that. But yeah, that's the only thing I'd say. I've actually had a good journey. I'm proud of how I've managed to go from where I started out to where I am today, business-wise. I don't think I would have made any other choices creatively. I don't think I would have made any other choices marketing-wise. I think I've been very, very lucky in that my path has been pretty both crooked, but straight in a sense as well. I mean, I don't regret any of the choices I made business-wise or creatively.
Nice. That's a nice position to be in. Jonas, where is the best place for people to check out not only your work, but also find out about these upcoming workshops in 2015?
Yeah, it's my blog, basically. So if you go to jonaspeterson.com, and then you can either click on, there's a workshop tab, but there's also more information on my blog. But even up in my menu, there will say workshops, and then there will be different cities around the world. In this region, I'm shooting in Auckland and in Adelaide. That's the two cities I have around here early next year, first couple of months. And then there's a few European dates and a few American dates as well. But for Australia and New Zealand, there's two dates available. And they're very close to selling out. So that's the thing I would have to... So I've been lucky that people are still interested in what I have to say. So, yeah, but on my blog, basically, that's where you find the info.
Fantastic. Jonas, again, thank you so much for giving up some of your time. It's been a real pleasure.
My pleasure.
You're listening to the number one photography business podcast with Andrew Helmich, photobizx.com.
I hope you enjoyed that interview, the second interview I've done with Jonas Peterson. I'd love to read your comments, your feedback, your takeaways. Is there anything that you'd like to implement as a result of what Jonas had to share in today's episode? Leave your comments, no matter how controversial, in the show notes over at photobizx.com/100. And Jonas, if you're listening, thank you again for giving up some of your time. It is appreciated by me and by the listener. So thank you. I haven't shared any voicemail messages for quite a few episodes, but today I've got two to bring you. And the first one is from Alan Moyle from Photobat in Melbourne. I actually interviewed Alan back in episode 58, where he shared a whole lot of great stuff on how to network with other photographers and also how to host your first photography exhibition, which is very cool. There's a spreadsheet there available for premium members and also the actual interview to download for you. But here's the message from Alan.
Hey, Andrew, it's Alan Moyle here. Just ringing up to say happy 100th birthday anniversary podcasting. What you're doing for the industry is pretty amazing, and so glad that I can be supportive of it and to share it amongst everybody. So congratulations, well done, and keep going.
Hey, Alan, thanks so much, mate. I do appreciate the message, the happy birthday or happy anniversary or whatever it is. Mate, I do appreciate you leaving the message. And And more so, I love how supportive you are of me and the podcast, and the fact that you're one of the biggest advocates for the show. I remember at the recent APA Awards, you convinced me to print up some flyers. And not only that, you took a bundle of them from me or from Linda and went around and handed them out and preached to anyone that would listen about how good the podcast is. So, mate, I do really appreciate that, and love having your support and having you as a friend as well. So thanks again, Alan. The second voicemail that I want to play you is from Lee Jones from Phytography in the UK.
Hi, Andrew. This is Lee Jones from Phytography over in the UK. I just wanted to leave this as a voicemail rather than writing it out, because I didn't think it would probably come across in the right way. Now, I made a really good review on iTunes for you after 50 episodes, and you're nearing 100. And to be honest, it's a bit of a complaint, really. The last 4 months, you've probably noticed I've not been online as much, sort of shouting the praises of PhotoBiz X, and I haven't listened to a single new episode. It's cost me a fortune, you know, the $10 a month thing, and it hasn't, you promised a return on our investment. I don't think it's returned on my investment once over, not at all. Cost me a lot of time listening to the first sort of 70 episodes or so. You know, my business has actually taken place several steps backwards, so much so that I'm considering no longer being a self-employed photographer. I mean, it's cost me a fortune this year. You mentioned the words ton and gold, and I've even had to change my jobs more recently. Now, you may be thinking, you know, what the hell is this? The reason for the complaint is because you're costing me so much time. The business has actually been so successful in the last year. The reason I don't want to be a self-employed photographer anymore is because of, the business has been so successful. Last year I aimed to do 15 weddings and I actually finished out with about 26. I mentioned taking several steps back in the business. Now I'm actually, because of the episodes, I have a massive to-do list, hence why you're costing me a lot of time. I'm reviewing all the procedures, the whole customer experience. I'm rebranding. I think I've also found my style and where I sort of want to aim at now. I'm also not chasing all the inquiries, all the money, all the bookings, because I've increased my prices probably more than double since I first started listening to PhotoBiz. I include albums with all the packages now. And I'm not actually discounting, I'm trying to add upgrades or other things with added value to incentivise people rather than offering, you know, money off, discounts, etc. I've even taken on a new studio, and thanks to that damn Steve Saporito again, I didn't make really any bookings over Christmas because I've put a new structure in place for in-person sales and portraits, and I want to take a step back and start focusing on that and actually, you know, realising some proper value for my photography rather than just pushing forward everything on disc like I used to do and being mad busy. I've now changed my job, which allows me to spend a lot more time focusing on the business, and I want to spend time on the business rather than shooting for the business. You do mention the words ton, you know, and gold that people give every single week. And I really do think they have, hence the size of my to-do list. It's ridiculously big. But I've started listening back on the time management podcast, and I'm actually quite enjoying that and thinking, you know, hopefully this will help me moving forwards. I said you've cost me a lot of money. In the last year, I've invested in Light Blue, Wedding Works, which you saved me quite a bit of cash on, ProShow, Blogstomp, Fundy, Eyecatcher, which, you know, I've bought myself, and actually that's probably going to be one of the best investments I'll have made this year moving forwards. So I'm hoping to catch back up on the episodes. You know, do apologise, I didn't get the time due to work and various other commitments to catch back up, but I think, to be honest, that's your fault. Just wanted to say, hope you didn't get too scared at the first part, mate. Really do appreciate everything that you're doing and all the guests that have been on the show. And just a big thank you for me. Hopefully you can keep it going for another 50 episodes after 100. I just wanted to explain my return on investment comment as well. You do say that, you know, for the sake of a couple of cups of coffee each month, then you'll definitely get a return on your investment. You haven't returned my investment once over. You've returned it several times over. Just the Wedding Works discount that we got, that repaid my investment for a whole year. The amount of, you know, other information that I've had and that I've actually put into place in the business, I've doubled my average sales for the wedding photography, and I've introduced upsells and various other things in there as well, giving me opportunities moving forwards as well.
Wow. I'm being 100% honest here. That is the first time I've heard that voicemail from Lee, and I was thinking, oh my God. Here I was expecting a nice voicemail message for the 100th episode, and it's a complaint. So Lee, yes, you did scare the crap out of me with the start to that voicemail. But I got to say, wow, I'm absolutely rapt. Thank you, mate, so much for taking the time and for sharing what you did there. That's equal with the email from Deb Smith that I read earlier in the podcast. It's just so good to hear about your success. And if other listeners are having, just a small percentage of the success that you're experiencing from the podcast, then I could stop podcasting today and be happy with what I've produced. Yeah, that just makes me so happy. So again, Lee, thank you so much. I'll have to shoot you an email to make sure you actually hear this episode. You might have to jump forward 50 or so episodes. Yeah, just awesome. Thanks, mate. Wow. So for you, the listener, if you want to leave a voicemail message, it doesn't have to be as long as Lee's. And look, Lee's was cut off towards the end there. It's because there's a 1.5 minute sort of timer on the voicemail app that I have on the podcast website. If you do want to leave a voicemail message yourself about anything, you'll find the voicemail button or tab on the pages on the website. So for this episode, photobizx.com/100. I can get used to saying that. Alrighty, so just a quick announcement before I close out today's show. You may remember Kristen Kaup from episode 92 of the podcast, one of the best interviews I've done on the show. Kristen is a branding expert from Brand Camp, an absolutely amazing woman, a psychic even. She just did some amazing things on that show, and she cursed a lot as well. I think that was some of her appeal. So what I wanted to say was Kristen has a Business Blitz workshop about to kick off in February, and it does cost $499. But she has a special offer for the first 100 people that get in will pay just $199. Now, I received that email from Kristen late last week, so hopefully there are still some seats available for you. And I'll have a link to the Business Blitz workshop in the show notes for you to check out. But from what I understand, there's 6 separate classes. You get support from Kristen herself as well, and there also it also includes some live Q&A calls that you can have with Kristen as well. So if you heard that podcast episode with her, you'll know that she can do amazing things for your business. So that's definitely worth checking out. That's the Business Blitz workshop, and I'll have links to it in the show notes. Okay, that's going to wrap things up for this episode, episode 100 of the podcast. I know some of it was a little long-winded today, but I really wanted to share what I did. I wanted to thank you and everyone else that I did as well. So, it's a real milestone. I certainly feel some sense of achievement getting to episode 100. They say that when you start a podcast, that if you can get past episode 7, then you should be right. That was easy, getting to episode 7. It's thinking about getting to episode 100, it still blows me away. So thanks for being with me, and I'll be back next week. Have an awesome week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
If you have enjoyed this episode, head to photobizx.com. Join the conversation, leave a comment, and share your thoughts on the interview with Andrew and today's special guest.